I'm going to invite you to turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 8. This is part 10 of our Growing in Grace series, and we started looking at 2 Corinthians 8 last week, talking about grace and my financial priorities. And we're going to come back to finish that off today and read through the rest of this chapter. I told you last week that God talks a lot about finances and stewardship in the Bible. If you weren't here, in fact, I'd encourage you to go back and pick up that message from last week. You'll find it on our website. It's sort of some foundational thinking about what stewardship means and what the Bible has to say about that particular. And 2 Corinthians 8 is talking about giving. It's talking about the way that God desires, encourages us to be part and encouragement to other people. And here's the thing, really, that we started off talking about. We looked at Luke 10 through 13, sort of gives us this idea, overview of stewardship and of our finances and why it is that the Bible and Jesus talked about this so much. If you remember, the first 9 verses of Luke 16 give us a story, a very current story of an employee who cooked the books and unrighteously handled some finances. And it gives that example, and then it goes on to say why Jesus was telling the story. And he says, if he that is faithful in that which is least is faithful also in much, and he that is unjust in the least is unjust also in much. And then these words, if therefore ye have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, if you've not been faithful in human finances. It's really the unrighteous mammon is the old English word for money. If you've not been faithful in your financial stewardship, then who will commit to your trust the true riches? And if you haven't been faithful in that which is another man's, who shall give you that which is your own? If you haven't been faithful in that which is God's, then how's God going to trust you to be faithful in that which he gives to you? So then verse 13, no servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. Can't serve God and money. It's two different masters. And we just came back to this verse 11. If therefore you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? So what we started off last week saying is that Christians, make sure that we're all on the same page on this. One of the first tests of your faithfulness, and really one of the first tests of your faith for most of you, is going to be about money. It's going to be about stewardship. It's going to be about giving. Because God knows that where our treasure is, there will our heart be also. There's this connection, we said. There's sort of a cord, a chain that goes from our heart to our checkbook or to our wallet. And so it's one of the big tests, and it's the reason that we want to come back to this. And we're looking specifically at 2 Corinthians 8. And I told you last week that we came to this text because of the number of times that the word grace shows up in these first few verses. Let me set the stage for you again, if you remember this right. There are three key groups that we're introduced to in this chapter. We're introduced to the Corinthians. Obviously, that's who the book is written to. Paul's going to talk about the Macedonians, and then he gives reference to the church at Jerusalem. So the Corinthians, the Macedonians, and the church at Jerusalem are all three critical pieces, critical information to understand in order to get the rest of this passage. One of the main reasons that he's writing is because the church at Jerusalem was going through great persecution. And this persecution was having an effect in all kinds of things, including their finances. I mean, this makes sense. They were forced to go into hiding. So their homes were taken away because of the persecution. They lost their jobs. They weren't able to trade and barter openly on the market. And so if you read a little bit about what was going on in the church there in Jerusalem, I mean, they were facing some really hard times. So the believers in other locations were feeling as if we want to help. And so they were taking up offerings in Jerusalem and in Macedonia and in other locations, in Corinth and Macedonia. And They were taking up offerings to try to send back to help their brothers and sisters that were going through the persecution that was there in Jerusalem. So Paul is writing to the church at Corinth, and he's reminding them about a promise that they had made a year earlier that they would be a part of this offering. And so he's reminding them about that promise, and he's using the church at Macedonia, who had given very generously, as an example to try to encourage the church there in Corinth about what they had promised to do. So that's the context with which we pick up verse 1, and we're going to overview 1 through 5, which we looked at last week, and then we're going to spend the rest of our time kind of going in 6 through 15 and just working through these verses in this text. But let's begin reading in verse 1. Paul says, "Moreover, brethren, we do you to wit of the grace of God." He says, we want you to know, all right? We want you to know about the grace of God that has been bestowed on the churches in Macedonia. And what I want to do this morning is just pull out 4, I hope, really practical principles or guidelines which deal with our attitudes and our practices in regard to this biblical concept we were calling grace giving last year. So, and number one, and I know that we said this last week, we really need to put it down again to lay this foundation, but number one, grace giving is not optional for the believer. And we find that in a number of places in the Bible. We specifically reference verse 7, "Therefore, as ye abound in everything, in faith and utterance and knowledge and all diligence, and in your love to us, see that you abound in this grace also." All right, Paul says, he gives high commendation to the church at Jerusalem in so many areas. All of these good qualities, Paul says, don't forget giving. Don't lose track of how important this part of your spiritual life is as well. And so we said this last week, but let me fill you a little bit of the outline that we didn't get to last week, and we're going to revise the structure a little bit and work our way down through this text. So the way that he describes this grace giving is a couple of things. Number one, he says, grace giving is sacrificial. I think we're going to see that in verse 2 and a few other references. So sacrifice means that sometimes it's going to hurt a little bit. I mean, I think that's what it talks about. There's going to be some giving up of some things in order to be generous to others and in order to advance God's kingdom. We find pretty clearly that these Macedonians that he's referencing are not rich. They're not living the easy life. They're going through, verse 2, just pick out a couple words here. He says they're going through great trials and they're going through incredible afflictions, or your translation might say persecutions. And then he says that they have a deep poverty. These are words that are not indicating somebody that's really wealthy. Yet in spite of this sort of bleak picture that he paints of who they are and what they're going through, the Macedonians recognized that there was a need. Their heart was open to the burdens that their brothers and sisters in Christ in Jerusalem were facing. And so they gave, and they gave generously for that. They didn't have much. On their own, they had their own deep poverty, but it was okay. They weren't burdened by their lack of funds. They just were sacrificing for Christ's sake, and whatever they had, they could just give it away with generosity. I mean, this is what Paul's describing here. And here's what it says. I've sort of summarized it in this way. In fact, if you got this morning, it might change your whole perspective of life and of finances and of stewardship. If you understood, if we kind of bought into this idea that the Macedonians exemplified for us, but that the richest generosity often comes out of the deepest sacrifice and results in the fullest joy. The richest generosity doesn't always come from the richest people. Sometimes it comes out of deep sacrifice, and at least in the Macedonian's case, it results in this incredible joy. So what does this sacrificial grace-giving look like? I think it looks like this. It's this willingness to give, whether it's out of abundance or whether it's out of poverty. And not just to give, but to give sacrificially. Maybe even giving up some of our own comfort so that the needs of others would be met, so that ministry would be accomplished, so that God's kingdom would be able to go forward. I think this scripture is not referencing for us sort of this idea that we determine what is extra. You know, we sit down and we put our budget together and find out, you know, the part that maybe I just have sitting around collecting dust. It's not talking about that. It's talking about giving maybe even sometimes of what I need or maybe some things that I want. Saying, okay, God, if I give this that you're burdening me for, I'm not exactly sure how this is all going to work out, but I sense that this need is there and I want to be part of the solution and seeing this need met. So grace giving is sacrificial. Number two, I think verse 3 says grace giving is faith motivated. It says, for to their power I bear record, yea, and beyond their power they were willing of themselves. I mean, it says these individuals were giving everything that they could possibly give. They gave everything under their power and then they gave some more. There was this very deep faith that's evidenced here. I don't know if you've ever been in a place where you experienced some of the poverty that this is talking about. I don't know if you've ever been in a situation where you didn't know where your next meal was going to come from, or where the money for groceries for the next few days was going to take place, or probably a lot of us have experienced, I don't know where the money's going to come from to pay this bill or to make this house payment. And then in that situation, God brings somebody into your life that has their own financial need. And you see their need and your heart feels the weight of what they're lacking. And what do you do then? How do we handle it when we're not even at the place where we know how we're going to pay our next bill or how we're going to take care of this next need? And the Macedonians, I don't know how to understand this any other way, but it says, for to their power I bear record, even beyond their power they were willing, they were giving of themselves. I think we have this idea that they gave to God first. We'll see that in chapter 9. They gave to God first under the assumption that as God is asking them to give, they had the faith to believe that God was going to provide for and God was going to meet their needs. I think this is an example of true faith giving. I would tell you, Christians, especially young believers, young Christians, if you wait to give until you have enough extra to give, you may never give at all. It's not often that most of us have a chance to, you know, look at our income and look at our budget and feel like, wow, you know, boy, I've got all this extra just sitting around. I don't know what to do with it. I guess I'll give it to the church. So it's not often that we feel that way or we've experienced that. In fact, more often, it's we see our income and we understand our expenses, and week by week, month by month, we're not sure how it's all going to fit. And I'm just telling you that if you wait in order to give until that point that you know that you have extra to give, it's possible that you might not ever reach that place. Turn with me back to Matthew chapter 6. And again, I'm just trying to talk through, you know, real specifically what these texts tell us and what they teach us. Matthew chapter 6 is a familiar passage about seeking God first. It talks a lot about finances and money. In fact, we have very similar terminology. If you look at verse 24, no man can serve two masters. All right, you can't serve God and money. In verse 25, sort of starts this idea. Therefore, Jesus is talking. He says, take no thought for your life, what you'll eat or what you shall drink, nor yet for your body, what you shall put on. Christian, don't spend your life worrying about these things, what you're going to wear, what you're going to eat. And then he goes on. Remember this story, because he says, if God takes care of the birds of the air, Don't you think he's going to take care of you? And then he says, if God takes care of the flowers of the fields, don't you think that he can take care of you? And then go down to verse 33. I mean, we could read this whole thing, but he says, but seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you. If you'll put God first in every area of your life, including your finances, I mean, that's the context. It's talking about stewardship of our finances. If you put God first in all of these areas, God's promise is that he will take care of these things for you. All these things will be added unto you. What things? Well, just like the birds of the air, they don't have to worry about what they're going to eat. And the flowers of the field, they don't have to worry about what they're going to wear. God's going to take care of these things if and when you put God first in every area of your life. So this grace giving is sacrificial, and this grace giving is faith motivated. I think all these things tell us about this giving is not optional for the believer. Okay, here's the second principle. Go back to 2 Corinthians 8. We're going to skip down to verses 8 and 9. Say, I think they tell us this. Don't give because you feel you have to. Give because you want to. It's a very important picture that we're adding, Paul's adding into this idea. Don't give out of compulsion. So I'm trying to be very clear this morning and in these couple days about what the Bible says about stewardship and about finances and about giving. But don't misunderstand this. I don't want anybody to walk away from here feeling like, man, now I feel pressured in this area. That's not what Paul's doing. He's going to give examples. He's going to speak very clearly and very distinctly. But he's saying, hey, listen, I don't want you to give because you feel like you have to. The only right kind of giving is out of the motivation of desire to want to. Verse 8 says, I speak not by commandment. All right, I'm not telling you what to do in this area. But by occasion of the forwardness of others and to prove the sincerity of your love. I'd say it because of the example of others, that's the Macedonians. I want you to know about their example because I think it's a good evidence of their genuine love. Don't do this because you have to. Don't be a giver or a generous grace giver because you feel that you have to. The only reason that you should is because maybe you see the examples of others who are giving so generously and joyfully out of their own generosity, and you say, boy, I want to be like that. This is a common idea that's connected with this grace giving. So your reason to even think about this kind of stewardship of our finances is not because of external pressure, but always because of the internal compulsion of the Spirit encouraging us that we want to be a part of this joyful generosity of grace giving. Paul had no desire for these people to give because he pressured them. He wanted them to give for sure. He was encouraging them to give, but it was to give because of the sincerity of their love and for no other reason. Number 3 says this, I think verses 10 and 11 start talking about this idea that good intentions are no substitute for intentional actions. Verse 10 says, and herein I give my advice, for this is expedient for you who have begun before, not only to do, but also to be forward a year ago. Now therefore perform the doing of it, that as there was a readiness to will, so there may be a performance also out of that which ye have. And I don't know if you're tracking that flow, but what Paul's saying here is that these Christians at Corinth had made this promise a year ago. Hey, we want to be a part of this offering. We want to give as generously as we can towards this offering. But nothing had happened. They hadn't given. And so Paul is reminding them of what they had promised, and he's saying, you know, fulfill this promise. My advice to you, not for my own sake, not even for the sake of the church of Jerusalem, because this is expedient for you that you've promised before, so go ahead and do it. Go ahead and follow through. Perform the doing of it. For as there was a readiness, you wanted to do it, so there should be a performance also of that which ye have promised to do. Right? We know this, right? Good intentions are no substitute for intentional actions. It's true for us in every area of life, right? Good intentions aren't the same as fulfilling our intentions and our intentional actions. We see this in a lot of places. I was thinking about our marriages. Those of you that are married, maybe you understand like me. I don't know if you've ever had good intentions in your relationship with your husband or your wife, but you didn't fulfill it. And I don't know about you, but I found out that in my marriage, that good intentions are no substitute for intentional actions. It's not good enough just to say I had good thoughts about it. It'd be sort of like, actually, I thought I'd pick on Pastor Jared here for a minute because I'm not going to have many opportunities to do this later on. So let's say Pastor Jared and Tammy, I'm sorry to bring you into this with him, but so let's say they're home one evening and Tammy decides that she's going to go out and do a little bit of shopping. She's going to run out to the mall, and so she leaves, and Pastor Jared is left there by himself for a few hours, and Tammy comes back to their house, and their house is a wreck. I mean, she had left it looking beautiful. Everything was in its place. All the dishes were done. Everything was clean. And she came back, and it was clear that Pastor Jared had had a good time, all right? He'd cooked some dinner, and the dishes were still all over the kitchen. And he went and took a shower, and his clothes were all around the room. I mean, every place that he had been in the house, there was this trail that sort of followed him. And she walks into the living room, and there's Pastor Jared, and he's sitting on the couch, and he's got a bowl of popcorn on his lap and a pop in his hand, and his feet are up, and there's just dishes all over the place. And he looks up as Tammy walks in, and he smiles, and he says, "Hey, baby." I don't know, is that? Says, "Hey, baby, I was... you know, I just want you to know that this whole time, as long as you've been gone, I have been thinking that when you got back, I was going to have this whole house all cleaned up. And I just want you to know that this whole time, yes sirree, baby, I was thinking that I was going to do that." And I think Tammy would probably bop him with her purse or something. I don't know. Right? Good intentions are never a substitute for intentional actions. We need to fulfill what we've promised to do, what we're committed to do. Listen, I don't know that there's anybody who doesn't want to be known as, or to have, even not so much of what people know, but you don't, inside you, you want the character trait that says, "Hey, I want to be a giving person. I want to be a generous person." But I want to tell you, this is what Paul was saying. As much as you want to do that, the good intentions are not enough. It's not a substitute for the intentional actions that have to follow through on this. Paul says, don't talk about it. That's what the Corinthians had done for a year. Don't talk about it. Do it. Do it. So can I ask you this morning, what kind of a giver are you really? Are you looking for opportunities? Because there's people all around you that have needs. There's gospel opportunities all around you that have needs. Are you an intentional giver, or are you just somebody that, like everybody else, who says, you know, it would be great if, wouldn't that be nice if I could? Principle number four. I want you to pay very close attention to this, but this is an important category in a whole understanding of stewardship, but I think verses 12 through 15 tell us this, that God does not desire equal gifts, but he desires equal sacrifice. One of the great principles in the Bible in regard to giving is this idea of proportion, or we are to give a portion of what God has given us. I think the Bible talks about giving in two main ways. Number one, it talks about the regular giving back a portion of our income. And this principle is found from the beginning of the Bible all the way through the end. The idea that as God has prospered you, God asks for, encourages you to give back. Sometimes we use sort of the terms of a first fruits gift. It's sort of our way of saying, and God's encouraged us to remind us that it's all His. And the best way to continually be reminded that everything that I have is God's is to say the first part, the first fruit of whatever God has given me, I'm going to give back to Him in portion. In the Old Testament, we may look at Malachi before we're done here, but in the Old Testament, it talks in terms of a tithe of everything that they had, all of their possessions, or a tenth. In fact, actually, the Old Testament principles were more than a tenth if you start to add up all of the offerings that they were to give in the nation of Israel. The percentages go up higher than that. But sort of rounded out, we could say the Old Testament called God's people, the nation of Israel, to a tithe of everything that they had. I said last week, the New Testament doesn't use that term, but it gives us similar kinds of wording and similar kinds of terminology. Here's one of the examples of it. He says that we should give in proportion to. There's not like this amount that everybody should give. You know, it's sort of the old flat tax idea. Everybody gives $10. Whoever you are gives $10. It's not that. The Bible just always talks about in proportion. If God has given you a lot, then your proportion is going to be bigger. If God has entrusted you with less, then the proportion is going to be less. And Paul talks about this a lot, that he just wants to make sure that the sacrifice is equal. And he knows he's calling for a sacrifice. So the Bible talks about giving in a regular giving back a portion of our income. And then it also talks about, I'm calling it this morning, this blessing giving. Blessing giving to meet the needs of others and to advance kingdom opportunities, to give to friends and neighbors that have a need, to give to ministry projects that have financial needs. Blessing giving is different than this regular, weekly, monthly, proportional giving that the Bible talks about. In fact, what this text is saying is this: in your giving, in this extraordinary giving to meet this extraordinary need, everybody should sacrifice equally. It's not right that some should sacrifice and others should not. He says, we're all in this together. Don't expect a few people to carry this load. Everybody should have equal sacrifice, not necessarily equal giving, as we share together in this ministry. You know, from the beginning, Harvest Baptist Church and Harvest Ministries have been in my understanding, a model of 2 Corinthians chapter 8 in the way that people, the church, has given sacrificially and generously. This ministry stands today on a foundation of sacrifice and faith that we have to always remember. We can't ever forget. Our history talks about Pastor and Mrs. Ring, Bruce Ring, in 1975. Pastor Ring moved their family to Guam over 40 years ago, and they moved at great sacrifice. I don't know their financial situation. I don't know what all of that was, but I'm sure they left home and friends and family with just this belief that God had called them to this area and that there were people that needed the gospel and that God would provide for their needs. There was a faith step that brought the Rings to Harvest, to this area, to Guam in 1975. 1979, Pastor Lewis became pastor. John Lewis was the pastor, and you know, his story again is one of sacrifice and faith. He left a very successful businesses all across this island to be called of God to pastor this young, just starting up church in 1979. And you know, lots of things happened in those years and over the history of Harvest, and land was purchased and property was funded and then, you know, renovated, and buildings were added and ministries were added. The Bible college began in 1993 and the radio station in 1996. This auditorium that we're in right now began or was completed in 1995. And other things have happened. 2002, Typhoon Hongsonghua came through and devastated our campus, and Harvest rebuilt in so many ways during that time. And through all of this, some of you, many of you were here, and God was faithful. Not just the faithful sacrifice of pastors, there was people in those early days that gave generously and gave by faith. I wanted you to think about people, not just ideas, people that God called here to Harvest, and they gave their lives for this place, for this ministry. Not just finances, I'm talking about time. I've loved hearing the stories of so many of you that I've talked to here in these early days, and you just talk about you were just here all the time, hours and hours and hours. I mean, this was home that you were here serving and giving, and the generosity and the faith that was involved in all of that. Erecting of this building. No idea in many of the construction projects about how God was going to provide. There was some forethought and some planning that took place, but there was no guarantee. Sacrifices of time and energy and money just on the belief that God wanted a church here in this area of Guam, in this piece of land, and in this corner of Barrigada and Mangmatotamaiti, that this was the location that God was placing this body of people. And not just a church, but a church that would be faithful to the Word. Let me tell you, God honored the sacrifices of those faith steps. I get excited just hearing about how God supplied and how God met needs both of the church and of these people as they gave so sacrificially. This is our story, Harvest family, that's here today. This is our story. This is our family. This is our history. You know, in the next year, we're going to be talking about the future. We're going to be talking about ministry opportunities in front of us and ministry initiatives and praying and thinking and dreaming about open doors that God is asking us to venture through in the next year, in the next 5 years, in the next 10 years. What is Harvest going to look like as God calls us to the next stage, the next season, the next portion of ministry that God's called us here? And we've been saying this. I've been saying it. I think you're saying it along with me. Man, I just don't think that God has called us, you and me, I don't think that God's called us to be a part of Harvest just so that we could sit in this beautiful campus that God has raised up in this place. I don't think He's called us just to rest and enjoy the hard work and the sacrifice that a generation of Harvest servants invested in this place and in this ministry in the 40 years of our history. I just don't believe that's what God has for us. I don't think God just wants us to sit in this beautiful place and sing songs and fellowship together. I mean, if that was true, I guess we should ask Him to call us home, because we're going to get to sing songs and fellowship together in heaven. There's a time for that. I don't think that's all why God has called us here, you and me. I think He's called us here to do something. I think He's called us here to do something. And I don't know for sure what exactly that picture is supposed to look like. I know that it's about making disciples, because that's our mission. We get that straight from the Scriptures. So we know that we're supposed to look out ahead of the opportunities in front of us, and we're going to invest our lives, everything that we have, in this mission of making disciples here in Guam and really to the nations of the world. We know that part. But I don't know all the answers about what it's going to look like and how it is the next years. I have some ideas. I think you have some ideas. But I just believe with all my heart that God is calling us here to do something special. I think the foundation of who Harvest is and where we've been is here in front of us to look to the future and say, God, would you take this and use it in ways that would glorify your name in the coming years? And I guess I just want to remind you that not just this idea that we're all in this together, but we're all in this together to sacrifice and to live by faith, because we believe in the mission and we believe that it's worth it. And we believe that God's doing something special here. And so we want to be a part of what God's doing in this place and what God's going to do. And we want to be a part of it together, all of us. I mean, if you're here this morning and this is your home, if Harvest is your home, I'm not talking to just maybe, you know, a few people. If this is your place, I'm saying all of us together have the opportunity to say, this is my place and this is my calling. And I want to be a part of what God's doing here, not only right now, but I want to be a part of it in the future. But I want to tell you that God's blessing is going to be proportionate to the generous, sacrificial giving, faith-motivated direction that you and I share together. Luke 16:11 says that if I can't trust them with little things, then how am I going to trust to them the true riches? People that are faithful with that which is least, those are the ones that I can trust with greater stewardship. So this has been a pretty specific topic here these 2 weeks. Just before we're done, I want you to think about a couple things. Number one, what is God asking you to do about becoming a generous, sacrificial, faith-motivated giver to advance God's kingdom? I want you to think about it personally. I want you to think about it as a family. Maybe for some of you, the first step is just to commit to making a habit of giving a regular portion of what God has given you. You might be saying, man, Pastor Gary, I don't know. I mean, you know, I look at my budget. I look at how all that fits together. And I would just tell you this. I'm not embarrassed this morning to challenge you to take this step of obedience. And if I can, and I want to tell you, it's not self-serving at all. It's not ministry serving when I'm talking about this. God is going to take care of this church. He's been doing it for more than 40 years. He's going to continue to do that. Don't misunderstand what I'm saying here. It's not a self-serving here. It really is about this clarity of the scriptures about how significant this stewardship of your life is. And I want to encourage you to right away take this step, which says, God, I'm going to, by faith, trust you that I can give even when I'm not sure how all this is going to work out. I would tell you, I believe that as you follow God in obedience and generous giving, God will meet your needs. I would encourage you to take the test. Prove the test. Go to Malachi chapter 3. It talks about this. Prove this. The question is about whether you're going to be a part of what God is doing here, an invested part of what God's doing here. And even more important, I really think, is this foundational test. Because when we give, it's sort of like we're saying, God, it's all yours. This is all yours. So that's the first thing. What's God asking you to do about becoming a generous, sacrificial, and faith-motivated giver to advance God's kingdom? Number two, maybe for some of you, you have been a giver, but if you're honest, you've kind of been a stingy, reluctant one. And maybe this conversation is helping you to determine this morning to be a grace-filled, generous, cheerful giver. Maybe you and your family need to be more intentional about looking for opportunities to give and ways and people that have needs all around you. And then the last thing is this. You might be here this morning and you'd say, man, this is the kind of church that I want to be a part of. Not just attend, but I want to be invested in. I want to have the accountability of. We really believe that the Bible teaches the importance of church membership and sort of this mutual accountability together. I don't think the Bible has any place for free agent Christians. So maybe this morning you're saying, boy, I want to be part of what God's doing here and what God's going to do here. I want to join together with this church family. And here's the last thing. I want you to think about what Paul says in regard to the greatest sacrifice ever made. And we find it in verse 9. It says, "For ye know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, that ye through his poverty might be rich." I mean, when you talk about a sacrificial gift, we always have to come back to the cross. It's always back to the cross and the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. And what Paul says is that this is the picture of grace. When we see again what God has done for us, where Jesus Christ gave up his own life in order to save you, to save me from losing ours. And this morning, it may be that this is the time, the first time that that really makes sense to you. That God gave up his life in order to give life to me. And it could be that you walked in here this morning and this last week for you has been a week where it's just been a lot of heaviness and a lot of loss and a lot of confusion. You know, it might be that God brought you to this place this week in order for you this morning to come face to face with Jesus Christ and the answers that he provides and he wants to provide. He is the ultimate giver, the ultimate grace giver. This morning, if you're here and you feel like you're losing your life, can I tell you about Jesus Christ, the one who through his poverty has come in order that you may have all the blessings, all the spiritual blessings that he provides.